This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Bill Paxton, has starred in such independent films as One False Move and A Simple Plan, and he starred in such big-budget pictures as Twister and Apollo 13. He makes his directorial debut with the new thriller Frailty, which he also stars in. Paxton plays a man who has recently lost his wife and is now raising two sons. One night, he has a vision, which he shares with his two boys.
The end of the world is coming. It's near. The angel showed me. There are demons among us. The devil has released them for the final battle. It's being fought right now. But nobody knows it except us and others like us.
I'm scared, Dad.
There's nothing to be afraid of, Tiger. We've been chosen by God. He will protect us. He's given us special jobs to do. We don't fear these demons. We destroy them. We pick them up one by one and we pitch them out of this world. That's God's purpose for us. The angel called us God's hands.
So we're like superheroes?
That's right. We're a family of superheroes that are going to help save the world.
But Dad, that doesn't make any sense.
I know it sounds that way, son, but it's the truth.
After sharing this religious vision with his sons, Paxton, guided by the vision, kidnaps and brings home several people who the angel says are really demons. For the greater good of the world, he kills them with an axe. He asks his sons to help him with the murders. The younger son believes in his father's vision. The older son is sure his father has lost his mind, but he still loves his father and is afraid to turn him in. The children, particularly Matt O'Leary, who plays the older son, turn in good performances. I asked Paxton about the difficulty of auditioning children.
A lot of child actors kind of have their shtick that they kind of come in with, and one thing I noticed with Matt O'Leary, of all the actors, he came back, he'd had a good audition with the gals, and they brought him back to read for me. He was the only actor who didn't ask for pity in his portrayal of young Fenton. He didn't try to go for the emotional thing. He was very stoic, and as I talked to him about the part and how he saw it as a guy who's trying to keep his family together, and he's kind of looking out for his kid brother, but he also really loves his dad. And I tell you, the way he read it, without going for those, you know, obvious sentimental kind of things and saying to the audience, pity me, I'm in this horrible situation, please pity me. He was stoic, and it just sent a chill up my spine because it was so, so believable.
Since Frailty is about a father who has these visions,
yes,
and he really believes that an angel has come to him and told him to kill people who aren't really people, they're demons,
yeah.
And he takes the message to heart and starts killing people.
Yes.
Were you afraid when you made this movie that a lot of Christians would be very angry and take it as an affront against fundamentalists in particular or Christians in general?
No, I didn't make this movie to offend anyone's personal or religious beliefs. This movie is not the gospel according to us, the filmmakers. This is a what-if movie, and it deals with some fundamental belief issues that deal with the Old Testament. But it also deals with the idea. See, for me, Frailty is a family tragedy. And even though you don't know till the end of the movie what is kind of true and what is false and who is good and who is evil, I always saw it as a familial tragedy. And whether this God, this Old Testament deity, came to this man and or not, it's still the final result was chaos and destruction of a beautiful family. I guess I was always disturbed by certain stories in the Old Testament. See, again, I was raised in the Catholic Church, and I guess it was more about Jesus and you know, loving one another. I think, to me, the movie ultimately is really about the folly of man's ego when he ordains himself to be God's executioner or punisher. I didn't make the movie to be controversial. I really kind of made it because I thought it was a good gothic kind of grim fairy tale.
This is just a very practical question.
Mm-hmm.
Your film, Frailty, starts, yes, with the credit sequence. A lot of films are, nowadays, the credits don't come till the end of the movie, or maybe they come 5 minutes into the movie. Just on a practical level like that, how do you decide where you want to put the credits?
Actually, the images we did were from a collection of Master Detective magazines that I collected. They're mostly from the 30s and 40s and 50s.
These are still photographs.
These are still photographs
that you see in the opening sequence.
And what it gave us a chance to set the tone.
They're kind of crime scene photographs.
Crime scene, kind of rural crime scene photographs. There's something about, you know, you seeing a guy, you know, pointing into the lake, or you see an arrow in the woods, and it's pointing to a mound, and just something like, what was that? What happened there? Now, this movie has to do with the whole kind of idea of kind of murder out yonder, stuff that takes place beyond the city limits, where, you know, people are isolated and, you know, things can go undetected for a long time, and the desolation of people kind of being separated.
Bill Paxton is my guest, and he makes his directorial debut with the new film Frailty. He also stars in the film. Since you play a father in Frailty, tell us about your father.
I'm very close to my dad. I was raised in Fort Worth, Texas, and I come from a family of four kids. And I have an older brother and a younger brother and a younger sister. And when I was a kid growing up in Fort Worth, my dad loved movies and plays, and obviously, it affected, my life's career. But my dad loved to go to movies, and he would take me and my older brother, Bob, to downtown to Fort Worth, where there were like three kind of main old movie palaces. I remember the Palace, the Worth, and the Hollywood. My dad would never take us to a Disney film. If we wanted to see something like that, then we had to go to a Saturday matinee. My dad liked to see... These were probably not R-rated movies, but, you know, movies like the Bond films and different things. I remember seeing the Ipcress File and Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte and some of those. And when we'd come out of the films, he would talk about the artifice of the films. He'd say, I really like the lighting or the props or the camera work or the Sean Connery's Taylor. And in a way, at first we thought, what the hell is he talking about? And then after a while, we started kind of digging the artifice, and we would discuss it. And I guess from an early age, I was aware of the illusion of filmmaking, and I've always loved the illusion. I've always loved, you know, the idea of image makers and creating these other worlds that are fabricated.
What did your father do for a living?
My dad worked for his father in a family-run hardwood lumber business. They were hardwood wholesalers out of the Midwest. It started in Kansas City back... before the First World War. And after World War II, my dad and his brothers went to work for their dad. My dad, there was a yard in Chicago, and eventually, after he married my mom, he moved down to Fort Worth, Texas, because there was a yard there as well. And he traveled, mostly calling on the trade, cabinet makers, musical instrument makers. He loved people, and he loved art. Over the years, he's kind of been my greatest resource. He sent me books like Simple Plan and Lords of Discipline when they were still in hardback, and said, hey, they just sold this to the movies. You got to go in there and try to see if you can do this. And he's been a great inspiration to me.
I understand that one of your father's dreams was to act himself, and he actually
yes.
has a small part in the movie A Simple Plan
yes,
that you start
he does.
In. And
yeah.
I thought I could play this scene.
Oh, terrific.
Let me introduce the scene. Jump in if I don't have any of the details
yes.
straight. Okay, in A Simple Plan, you, your brother, and a friend, and your brother's played by Billy Bob Thornton, the three of you stumble on this small plane that's crashed outside of town. And
yes,
there's
in the snow.
Millions of dollars
that's right.
in this plane, and you decide to keep the money.
Yeah.
So all kinds of terrible things happen. But anyways, while you're struggling with this guilt, because you know you're doing something that goes against your nature, but you're going to keep the money anyways, you're working in this feed store, and a customer walks in. You're very distracted. A customer walks in and complains that he thinks maybe
he's been
cheated.
Overcharged.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And the customer is played by your father.
It is.
Here's the scene.
You listening to me, Hank? Every Monday I come down here, buy two bags of feed, regular's clockwork. Two bags a week, four times a month. That's eight bags I'm supposed to be billed for. I don't know how else to get through.
December started on a Monday, Mr. Schmidt, so there were five Mondays in the month. So you came in here.
Are you
five
telling
times.
Me there were 5 weeks last month?
No, sir, I'm telling you there were five Mondays. Excuse me. Oh, I got it.
Yeah.
Hey, Hank, it's me.
Hang on a second. Listen, check that calendar over there if you don't believe me, sir.
It's Bill Paxton and his father, John Paxton, in a scene from A Simple Plan. What's the story behind the scene?
Well, there's a few stories. I mean, my dad sent me this book when it was a hardback, and I think it had only been out about 4 weeks. This is a debut novel by a great writer named Scott Smith. And he sent it to me, and he said, you won't be able to lay it down. It's got a lot of hair on it. I don't know what that means, but that means it's good, especially coming from my dad. I sat down to read this book. I could not lay it down. I called my dad after I read it, and I said, Dad, I'll never get to play this part. It's a brilliant part, but I'll never get to do it. I think there'll be a lot more prominent actors who will be lining up to do this. And over 5 years, I watched other actors who were slated to do it, but for one reason or another, the film kept capitulating, and eventually I kind of won the role by default, one of the greatest roles I ever got to play. I go up to start production. Sam Raimi directed the picture, and we started production actually in northern Wisconsin, but the production office I landed in was in Minneapolis. I walk into the production office to see Sam, and I'm looking up at the wall, and they usually put our the actors' 8x10s on the production office wall. And, you know, there's Billy Bob, there's Bridget Fonda, Brent Briscoe, there's my dad, there's Chelsea. Wait a second, what's my dad doing up there? Now, my dad, I got to back this up a little bit. My dad retired from the lumber business about 10 years ago and basically said, I really always wanted to be an actor. And I said, oh my gosh, you mean my life's work is just some continuation of your fantasy? Anyway, he had written Sam Raimi a letter and said, I've always admired your films, and I was wondering if there were any small parts that I'd possibly be right for.
And he didn't tell you he was doing that?
And he didn't tell me that. And Sam, a real gentleman, said, well, I liked your dad's letter, so I thought I'd give him a chance. And I said to Sam, well, he better be good. But my dad is terrific in the part, and has gone on to work for Sam Raimi again. He'll be featured in the upcoming Spider-Man, where he plays Willem Dafoe, who's the villain. I think he plays his houseman.
That's great. Was it bizarre to work opposite him in a scene?
It was very bizarre, very bizarre. And I realized he was, he's an older guy, and he was kind of falling into a rhythm with his lines. And so I had to kind of shake him up a little bit. And I said, come in and give me the business like you give it to me as Bill, Like, my dad will want me to send an autograph picture to some guy at an auto body shop, and boy, he will fax me, he will call me, he will just rail me till I take care of it. And so I said, give me some of that. And I kind of got him worked up, and I kind of gave Sam the signal to be ready to go. And once I thought I had him a good froth worked up with my dad, they rolled the cameras, and he really nailed it.
My guest is actor Bill Paxton. He makes his directorial debut with the new film Frailty. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is actor Bill Paxton. He makes his directorial debut with the new film Frailty. He starred in big-budget films like Twister and Apollo 13, and in independent films like One False Move and A Simple Plan. Now, I want to play another scene from A Simple Plan. And again, in this movie, your brother, played by Billy Bob Thornton, and a friend come upon this plane that's crashed, a small plane, and there's $4 million there. You decide to keep it, although your character knows that it's morally the wrong thing. But you do it anyways because it's too irresistible.
Mm.
And there's just one bad consequence after another that happens as a result of keeping this money. And you have to keep covering up things. You have to cover up that you're keeping the money, and then you commit a murder, and you have to cover up the murder. And one bad deed leads to another bad deed.
Once you start digging that hole, the more you dig, the deeper you get in.
Right. Now, in this scene... Your brother, who's kind of a little mentally slow and socially slow, your brother, played by Billy Bob Thornton, has asked you to meet him at the farm that your parents used to own. And
poignant scene.
Yeah, and in this scene, you've already both murdered somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Your brother's asked you to meet you at the farm. It's now broken down in total disrepair. Your brother tells you that he'd actually like to buy back the farm and live there. Let's hear the scene.
Jacob. Farming? Come on. You don't just buy a farm. You gotta work it. You gotta know about machinery and seed.
I know that.
No, you don't. Fertilizers,
pesticides, herbicides, drainage, irrigation, the weather. Come on, you don't know about any of that stuff. It's gonna end up just like Dad.
Why do you think he ended up like that?
I'll tell you how he ended up like that. He had two mortgages riding on the place. He couldn't make the payments.
Where do you think the money went?
He was a bad businessman.
Where do you think the money went? No, you think he spent it all on the farm? I'll tell you exactly where the money went. 4 years of college, bud. Yeah, didn't you ever think about how he paid for that? Didn't that ever occur to you?
No, my tuition was...
Listen, I'm supposed to get the farm. What do I get? I'm supposed to get the farm.
Jacob, you got the whole world. You can...
I don't want to hear that.
You can go anywhere you want.
This is what I want. This is where I want to be. It's my home, Hank.
That's Billy Bob Thornton and my guest Bill Paxton in a scene from A Simple Plan.
That's a very poignant scene. The idea that the brother, Jacob, wants to stay and fix up the old farm. I think for a lot of guys like the character that Billy plays and women of the same, you know, background, something about their childhood that they want to go back to. Whereas most of us grow up and we move on and we, you know, we have memories of our childhood, fond or indifferent. But, you know, we realize as we mature, you have to kind of let things go and move on. But many people get stuck in the past. And it's such a poignant thing when he wants to fix up the old farm. That movie is an intensely personal film for me because my relationship with my older brother, Bob, who is one of the great gentle lambs of the world. But I think in his heart of hearts, he wishes we still all lived on Indian Creek Drive in Fort Worth, Texas. And he's had a tough adulthood and been through a lot of stuff. And I drew off of that relationship. So for me, being in the movie was, again, it was very, very personal.
In what other ways does he remind you of the brother in your movie?
Well, he has the same kind of sly sense of humor, my brother, and he has kind of a penchant for saying the appropriate thing at the awkward moment. And actually, I had Billy talk to my brother on the phone several times, and he drew his character from my brother, as well as kind of the innocence of his own relationship and the innocence of his own children. He was kind of playing that innocence in the role.
Did you feel a responsibility to guide your brother in the same way that your character feels a responsibility toward his brother in the movie?
Yeah, I've been very involved in my brother's life. He's kind of my closest sibling in many ways, just because physically we grew up together, we went to camps together, and after his accident when he was 24.
What accident?
He was in a car accident and lost most of his eyesight, and he had had emotional problems before then and just compounded everything. He came up and lived with me in New York City. I was struggling. I remember I was working as a doorman at the Paramount Theater up in Columbus Circle there, and we lived in a kind of a one-room flat with my girlfriend down in the East Village, and those were kind of tough times, but we look back and we laugh about them now. We've always been close, my brother and I.
You got started in movies working on Roger Corman low-budget films. Which ones did you work on?
My first film was as a set dresser in the art department on a movie called Big Bad Mama that starred Angie Dickinson, William Shatner, Tom Skerritt, and Linda Pearl. And I was hired. I'd been out here a couple weeks, and I met a young art director by the name of Peter Jameson, brilliant young production designer, and he hired me. I remember I didn't realize that Culver City Studios was over here, and Universal was over the hill in the valley, and Paramount was in Hollywood, and I had a 20-foot van, a panel van, just full of everything from phony saguaro cactuses to all kinds of period furniture and things, draperies. And by the end of that movie, I think I worked 8 or 9 weeks without a day off. I knew this town like the back of my hand.
So your job was to find things that were needed for the set?
Yes. Yes, I traveled around. This was a period film set in the early 30s, so I had an old, I think, 1929 Sears and Roebuck catalog that I kind of used as a guide to pick out furnishings.
What's the coolest or most unusual thing you had to find?
Well, that's a good question. I'd have to think back. Those saguaro cactuses were pretty bizarre, from Walter Allen Plant Rental. I remember going to places like that are no longer. This was, you know, in the mid-70s. I remember going to Western Costume. And what was amazing about Western Costume, I think people will remember it from Nathaniel West's classic Day of the Locust, the novel and the book. It was a giant 8-story costume house right next to the Paramount Studios. It's been torn down. It's really a shame because it was great to go in there and you'd pull a shirt off the rack and it might say made expressly for Tom Mix or John Wayne or Gary Cooper. And the people that had worked there, it was kind of a generational type of job. There were people who worked there going back to silent films. And I guess I've always loved the history of the business I'm in. And it's a shame that more of it hasn't been preserved out here.
Bill Paxton directed and stars in the new film Frailty. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with actor Bill Paxton. He makes his directorial debut with the new film Frailty. He also starred in the big-budget films Twister and Apollo 13, and in the independent films One False Move and A Simple Plan. Now, I think your first role acting was in Mortuary.
You have done your homework.
What? I haven't seen Mortuary. Tell us what it's about.
A classic. I got that. I remember I didn't. This was back in the days when I was just starting out. This was probably about late. This is probably about 1980, right thereabouts. In those days, you know, I'd go in and very tough, the auditions. You know, 9 out of 10 times, they'll take the actor. Not the best actor for the role, but the biggest actor they can get for that part. And I would kind of go to great lengths to convince people I was the guy for the part. In Mortuary, I play the son of an undertaker who's gone a little around the bend with the death of his mother. And I because of my experience as a set dresser, I went down to a place I used to rent a lot of medical equipment from. It was a place called Physician Supply House or something. It's like down in downtown L.A. And I ended up, you know, getting a trocar. It's this thing for, disembowelment. And, you know, they pump the formaldehyde through the tube and a rubber tube. And I had like a handkerchief that I put all this red, you know, blood on. And I remember in the middle of the scene, this dramatic moment, I pull out this trocar from out under my coat, and I tell you, the people were about to call the, you know, studio security, cracked actor. And I remember not getting the part, but apparently the lead guy got fired. He got in a big fight with the director the first day of filming, quit the picture, and I got a call to come in and take over the role. It was a lot of fun. I guess I've always been drawn to kind of gothic movies from a kid. I've always had kind of a healthy sense of the macabre and the perverse.
When you were working on cheap movies early in your career,
mm-hmm.
did you meet a lot of people who were on their way up and on their way down?
Sure. That escalator goes both ways for sure. I remember I worked with some great people. One of the first art directors I worked for, a man named Jack Fisk, who's done a lot of David Lynch's films, and his wife, Sissy Spacek, used to travel around in a panel van with me picking up set dressing. She had done Badlands, the classic Terry Malick film that she co-starred with Martin Sheen in, but I met James Cameron the same way. I was hired on to be his set dresser in 1980 on a low-budget sci-fi movie called Galaxy of Terror. And here's this young art director, and I'm picking up drawings off the stage floor that are beautifully rendered, and they're all... Jim's a great draftsman and great artist. And Jim took an interest in me. He saw that I was more than just a guy painting flats, and he was telling me about a script he was writing and that he was going to direct at the time called The Terminator.
Right.
And I'd be like, it would be like 4 o'clock in the morning, we're painting a set. I'd be going, so let me get this straight. This cyborg comes back from the future to kill somebody in the past to prevent, you know, a revolution that's going to happen 100 years from now, you know, and Jim's a force of nature, and he's been a great friend, a great colleague, and a great mentor.
Now, you were in the remake of Mighty Joe Young a few years ago.
Yes.
I grew up watching that film over and over.
I did, too.
I lived in New York where on Million Dollar Movie, they'd show the same movie all week.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, they'd show the marquee, the Million Dollar Marquee.
So Mighty Joe Young was on just all the time, and... You know, Joe, no one can hurt you now.
And what a surrealistic movie. You know, I guess because of the success of King Kong, RKO wanted to try to capitalize on that franchise. But how do you capitalize on it when Kong dies in the first film? I mean, so they came up with this new concept of this other, you know, the smaller, you know, giant gorilla.
Smaller and more family-oriented.
Yeah, exactly. Although when you watch that movie now, you realize just how politically incorrect it was, the way they're throwing those lions around in that nightclub scene and the way the guy's feeding Joe the liquor and getting him all agitated. And they wouldn't let you make a movie like that today. One of the highlights for me was the idea that I was getting to reprise the role that was played by the great cowboy actor Ben Johnson. Ben, I got to meet years ago in a little movie called Back to Back that starred Apollonia. And Ben Johnson was in it, and an actor named Luke Askew, who plays the sheriff in Frailty. He plays the villainous sheriff. And we were down in Arizona at the bottom of the Superstition Mountains, shooting in a little town called Apache Junction. It's where Elvis shot Charo years ago. That was...
Where else have I seen the sheriff? I didn't see Back to Back, so where else would I have
Luke
seen
Askew it? Was in my movie Traveler that I produced.
I saw that.
Luke,
okay, maybe that's
he played
it.
The head of the gypsy clan that I was a part of.
It.
But he was a very well-known actor. You would have remembered him from movies like Easy Rider, Cool Hand Luke, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, the Great Northfield, Minnesota Raid, the Green Berets, Hurry Sundown.
Oh, okay.
He was very outspoken, kind of a Southern intellectual, raised a lot of hell, got himself, I think, kind of blacklisted in a way, but one of the most intelligent actors I've ever worked with. And I've kind of been on a crusade to kind of see him make a comeback. And I love Luke. And Luke actually gave me the idea for making the angel more of kind of an archangel with a flaming sword.
Well, I thought he looked like Kirk Douglas.
He did. Yeah, I wanted to go for that kind of Spartacus
kind exactly.
of look.
Spartacus
absolutely.
Era. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and these old vengeful angels from the Old Testament, when they showed up, it wasn't a good thing. You know, you read passages like we were afraid to gaze upon its countenance. And usually when, you know, these angels showed up, something nasty was about to go down. You know, they did kind of God's dirty work, so to speak.
Well, Bill Paxton, thanks so much for talking with us.
The pleasure, Terry. Thank you.
Bill Paxton directed and stars in the new film, Frailty. This is Fresh Air.